Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
On March 23rd, 2016, Officer Dan Kolar from the Grosse Pointe Public Safety Department in Grosse Pointe, Michigan, was patrolling an area in Detroit near the airport. It was an area that was for the most part desolate, with many vacant lots with overgrown trees and trash. It was around noon and he was driving around looking for stolen vehicles, something that that particular area was known for. He came across an older blue Chevy pickup truck backed into a vacant lot. He had recovered a stolen pickup truck in almost that exact same spot a year prior, and so it immediately caught his attention. He radioed over to dispatch and told them that he was going to investigate. As he pulled up, he saw that the hood of the pickup truck was open and the driver's side door was ajar. Before he could get out of his vehicle, a white male exited the driver's side and started waving his hands at him.
I rolled down my passenger side window and he approached me and asked me for a gallon of gas.
Okay, what was your response?
I was like, you need a gallon of gas. We kind of went back and forth. He goes, yeah, if you can just drive me to a gas station so I can get some gas.
Okay, what happened next?
And I seen that he had this a gold badge in his left hand. And I asked him if he was a police officer, and he shook his head yes. He didn't verbally say it, but motioned yes that he was a police officer.
The badge the man showed him had the words Fugitive Recovery Agent on it. The man said he was with the recovery team. Officer Kolar then identified himself as an officer with the auto theft unit, and he displayed his badge. He got out and walked to the front of the vehicle to where the man was standing. He asked him what he was doing there, and the man told him that he was there to pick up his girlfriend, who he said had been beaten up. Officer Kolar asked him for more proper identification, and so the man went to his truck to retrieve it. As he watched the man walk to his truck, he could see the silhouette of someone in the passenger seat. When the man came back, he showed him a Michigan medical marijuana card. The man then said he had a handgun on him and briefly lifted up his shirt to show him. There was a blue steel automatic handgun tucked into his waistband. Officer Kolar lifted up the man's shirt again and grabbed the gun. He then placed the man in handcuffs so he could figure out what exactly was going on. As he was handcuffing the man, he noticed that his hands were stained red. There was also red on the front of his blue jeans and on his jacket. Something's not right, he thought to himself. He asked the man where his girlfriend was, and the man motioned towards the truck. She's in the truck, he asked. The man told him that he didn't have to answer any more of his questions because he was in handcuffs. So Officer Kolar sat the man down on the sidewalk and walked over to the truck.
I approached it from the open driver's side door where I saw a badly beaten white female sitting in the passenger seat.
I'm going to show you authority and evidence of people's exhibit 14. Is this the woman that you saw in the truck?
Yes.
And is that how she looked when you first saw her?
Yeah, she had more blood on her face, but yes, that's how I saw her.
Did you notice anything about her hand?
She was appeared to be covered like in a blanket, and she had her hands up like this, and it was swollen, covered in blood, and had cuts on her hand.
Was she conscious at this point
in time? I asked her if she was okay. She gave a incoherent response. I could not understand what she was saying. And she only looked straight ahead. She never looked at me.
Did you try to move her at all at that point?
No, at that point I did go around to the passenger side door and open it up and again try to talk to her, but being the traumatic injury to her head, I didn't want to move her.
You said that she had a blanket. Could you see any part of her body that was exposed?
Her right leg. Like, I can tell she didn't have any pants on because I can see the bare skin. Again, the blanket covered her, and she just had her hands up like that.
There was blood all over the vehicle, on the dashboard, the driver's seat, the center console, the doors. He radioed dispatch again and requested a medic and backup. He then noticed more blood outside the pickup truck.
I kind of positioned myself between the defendant and the blue pickup truck. We're in a very desolate area. I was by myself. I didn't know if anybody else was around, so I kind of positioned myself to kind of keep an eye on, you know, the victim and the defendant.
Did you walk around the scene at all?
After several marked skull cars showed up, I did go around and observed, you know, blood outside the pickup truck.
What else did you observe outside the pickup truck?
Right outside the passenger side door on the ground was a live round of ammunition. From there, being in March, the grass is still kind of brown and dead. You can distinctly see a blood trail that went from like the passenger side door to the back of the pickup truck and went maybe another 20 feet behind the pickup truck, where I did observe like woman's pants with blood on it, blood-soaked underwear, a bra, all behind the truck within like 20 feet.
Paramedics and additional officers then arrived at the scene, the medics tending to the woman while the officers surrounded the man. What Officer Kolar didn't know right then and there was that things may have ended very differently had he not come across that old blue pickup truck. In fact, he may have just saved the life of the woman, whose name was Natalia Muntean. Usually in these cases, I would tell you that the victim didn't survive, and the perpetrator would then go to trial for her murder. But today's case is a little different than most you hear about like this, because in today's case, Natalia survives, and she lives to tell a harrowing tale about what that man, Radu Muntean, her own husband, did to her that almost resulted in her death. This is Jillian, and you are listening to Court Junkie, episode 82. Radu and Natalia Muntean got married in 2004, and in 2013 had their first child together, a daughter. But their marriage turned rocky not long after their daughter was born, and by March 2015, they were living separately. Natalia lived in a rented house in Hazel Park, Michigan, and Radu lived in his own house about a block away. Although they were separated, they were trying to work on their marriage and trying to get back together for the sake of their daughter. Their daughter lived with Natalia for the most part, but in March 2015, Radu insisted that she live with him because he didn't like some of the men Natalia had dated while they had been separated. And so Natalia agreed. A year later, in March 2016, Natalia was seeing a psychologist named Judith Rodman. On March 11th, 2016, she brought Radu with her to her appointment.
When Ms. Muntean arrived for her appointment, did you notice anything about her that was different?
Yes, I did. I noticed that she had bruises around her face and a blackened eye.
And did you ask her about what happened?
Yes, I did.
And what did she tell you?
She told me that she had fallen down the stairs, that she had been carrying a laundry basket.
And what was your reaction after that?
I didn't believe her.
And was this conversation occurring in front of the defendant?
Yes, it was.
Okay. So you were, the three of you were in your office?
Yes.
Okay. And you didn't believe her that she had fallen down the stairs with a laundry basket. So what did you do?
I just asked her. I said, please tell me what really did happen.
And what did she say?
She said he beat me.
And when she said he beat me, did she mean the defendant, Mr. Muntean?
Yes.
And
I asked him if it was true.
You asked him if it was true?
Yes, I did.
He had beaten her. And what did he say to you?
He said he did.
Okay. After he told you that he had beat her, what happened next?
I asked him what could be the reason for beating another human being.
And what was his response?
She lied to me.
And after he said that it was because she lied to him, what did you do next?
Well, I said, there's no reason for harming another human being for any reason.
And go on, anything else after that?
Would you be at risk of beating her again?
Okay, you asked him.
I did.
If he would do it again. And what was his response?
It depends on the lie.
Dr. Rodman told Natalia that she was concerned about her safety, and Natalia told her that she just wanted to talk about the fact that she had lied to Radu and not about the safety issue. Dr. Rodman tried to press her, but the couple then started talking about the lie Natalia had apparently told. She said their conversation was tense. Radu then asked to step out of the room.
I accompanied him. I walked to the door to walk him down our hallway into our clinic reception area.
And were you two having a conversation at this point?
Yes, we were.
Okay. And what was the nature of that conversation?
Well, Mr. Montin was expressing to me his fear that at our clinic, we weren't perceiving her correctly as she had been, according to him, telling us lies.
Okay.
And you know, that he expressed frustration about that.
Okay.
And
what was your response?
Well, I said, we can deal with that another time. But right now, we need you to please sit in our waiting room.
Okay. And how did he respond to that instruction?
He said, you are aggressive to me several times.
He told you that you were being aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What was the next step that you took after that?
He then left our hallway area, closed the door closed, and he stormed out of our suite.
Okay. And how did that make you feel?
I felt frightened, and I asked our front office staff to lock our clinic door.
Dr. Rodman then went back to Natalia. She was worried about her safety from that point on. And Dr. Rodman had good reason to worry. Just 12 days after that appointment, officers and medics were called to that vacant lot in Grosse Pointe, where a badly beaten Natalia was found inside Radu's pickup truck. Here's Detective Vogler talking about what he saw when he arrived on the scene. After he pulled up, he immediately went over to the blue pickup truck and found Natalia inside.
There was a female in the passenger seat. She was covered with a blanket, and she was had severe trauma to her face. The left side of her face was severely swollen, black and blue. Her eye was swollen shut. She was also bleeding from her mouth, nose, and her right eye. Upon further investigation, there was blood on her hands. It appeared she'd been stabbed in the hands. And there was blood throughout the interior of the truck.
What was her level of consciousness?
She was extremely disoriented.
Okay. And did you try to speak with her at all?
Yes, I did.
What did you ask her?
I asked her what happened.
What did she tell you?
What she said was, he was very upset because I was not honest about a previous relationship.
And is that all she was able to tell you?
That's all I could get from her.
He stayed with her while he radioed dispatch to tell them to hurry. He then reassured her that help was coming. As paramedics tended to her, he started examining the scene for himself.
Right outside the passenger side door where the woman was seated, there was a bloody tampon on the ground. There was also a condom wrapper, and there's also a blood trail, drops of blood in the grass leading away from the door towards the back of the truck.
Did you find any clothing? Or did you observe any clothing?
Yes, I did. There was the blood trail led to the back of the truck and then away from the truck south. And at one point I found there was some blood-soaked women's underpants. And then another 20 or 30 feet further away, there was a blood-soaked bra and pants that were hung up in some very low branches just off the ground. And there was quite a bit of blood on the ground there, too.
Natalia was transported to the hospital to be treated for her injuries. Another officer, Officer Steen, followed her there. And after doctors started their examination, Officer Steen received an odd request from hospital staff.
The doctors and the nurses came to us, myself and my partners, and they asked us to take handcuffs off of her.
Okay.
And I had a hard time understanding that because we didn't put any handcuffs on her. I didn't notice any on her, but I had to go into the emergency room where she was, and she had a pair of black handcuffs on her arm. I just don't recall which arm it was on.
After Natalia was transported to the hospital, Radu was placed under arrest. He was charged with assault with intent to murder, torture, unlawful imprisonment, assault with intent to do great bodily harm, and using a firearm to commit a felony and domestic violence. He was facing up to life in prison if convicted. As horrifying as this story is, and it is indeed horrifying, at his trial, Radu claimed that things weren't as they seemed. According to him, he wasn't trying to kill Natalia at all. In fact, he said he and Natalia had a suicide pact and that she was in on it. Stay tuned for a very bizarre trial. Radu's trial started in July of 2016. And right out of the gate, after opening statements, Natalia was called to testify. She was asked about an incident that occurred on March 11th, 2016.
He came over. He was at my house early in the morning, and he was assaulting. He assaulted me.
Did he hit you?
Yes.
Where did he hit you?
He was hitting me over the top of my head.
Okay.
He was careful not to hit my face, my shoulders, and my legs. He was kicking me. He was choking me.
She said she never reported that incident to police. She didn't want him to get into trouble, and she didn't want to make matters worse for herself. She told the jury that in March 2016, she was going to go to Chicago to enter into a program for treatment of depression. Radu was going to go with her, while their daughter would stay with her daycare provider. She was asked if in the days leading up to Chicago, she was making any preparations at the request of her husband, and she said yes. One of those things was to get a passport for their daughter. Natalia explained that Radu wanted to make sure they had all the paperwork in case he had to send their daughter back to Romania to live with his parents. They also had an agreement notarized in which Natalia signed full custody over to him. She said he told her that they were doing that in case something happened to her while she was in Chicago. Monday, March 21st was the day she was supposed to leave for Chicago. She went over to Radu's house and she admitted to taking drugs while there, namely Molly. She said she didn't want to take it, but that Radu insisted. At some point, her legs started to swell and she wasn't able to bend one of her knees, so she decided to go to the hospital. On the way there, as she was driving, she started to feel numbness on her left side and felt like she couldn't breathe. At that point, she pulled over and called 911. She was checked out at a hospital and then released and taken to a police station. From there, she called Radu to come pick her up. She said he wasn't happy about it and didn't show up for a while. When he finally showed up, he was with his friend Alex, a woman with whom he was friends. She said he was aggravated and paranoid. They went to a gas station in their neighborhood and parked the car there and then walked home because he was paranoid that the police were following them. The next day, she called the treatment center in Chicago to tell them she wasn't coming. She also spoke to Radu several times that day.
It was very accusatory and, aggressive or demanding, controlling.
She said she asked him to see their daughter and he agreed. He was going to come get her at 6 p.m. When he came to get her, she got into his truck and he started questioning her about a coworker who had come over to her house earlier in the day. He accused her of having a sexual relationship with him, which she said was not true. They went to their old house they used to live in together. He got out to get the mail, and when he got back into the car, he started talking about suicide.
We were talking, and he started talking about how suicide is really the only way out of this, and we should kill each other. And he took out a Ziploc full of pills, which he told me were Vicodins.
She was asked if at that moment in time she was suicidal, and she said no. Did you want to die that day? She was asked. No. Before you got into the car that day, did you want to commit suicide? She was asked again. No. Had you thought about it at all that day? No. She then described her reaction when he started to talk to her about this.
I was scared. I begged him not to do anything stupid. And he took the pills from the bag and put them in his hand and swallowed a bunch of them.
After he swallowed the pills, he then gave her some. When asked what she did with them, she said she kept them in her hand, but she didn't take them because she didn't want to kill herself. That was not something I wanted to do, she said. She said as far as she knew, the plan had been to go see her daughter, not engage in some sort of suicide pact. Did you ever agree to the plan to kill yourself? The prosecutor asked. I don't believe so, she replied. After she watched Radu down the pills, she said she tried to get out of the car, but he wouldn't let her. He told her, "You're not going anywhere," and he sped down the driveway. They continued to drive around, arguing about an ex-boyfriend of hers. She said she had two cell phones on her at the time, a personal phone and a work phone, but when she tried to use her work phone, he grabbed it from her and threw it out the window. It was at this point when he started shoving and hitting her, punching her, as he drove. He got onto the highway, and then he pulled out a gun.
He was kind of just like wiggling it around for a little bit.
Was he saying anything?
He was. I don't remember what he was saying. I just remember thinking, like, this is so dangerous. He could just accidentally shoot it or it could fire. And then he pointed it at my legs, and I pushed it away. And then he came back, pointed it at my legs again, and shot.
The bullet hit her in the calf, traveled through her leg, and then got stuck in her other leg. Natalia said she was in shock. She could remember her ears popping and that she was screaming, but she couldn't hear her own screams. She recalled the burning sensation in her calves and the smell of the fired gun as he continued to drive. They ended up stopping at an empty field somewhere in Detroit, she said. The field was very desolate. There was a burned-out house in the distance, but no people around. She said he told her that no one goes to that field and that no one would find them there for at least a month. They continued to sit inside the truck while he made phone calls. He called his friend Alex, and she could hear that they were talking about money that someone owed to him. He told Alex to come pick up some money from him, and he texted her their location. She said she couldn't remember what phone he was using at that point, that he could have been using hers. She knows that she even spoke to Alex at one point, but she said her memory is not 100% clear.
You said at one point you were using your phone to talk to Alex?
Yes.
Okay. Did you ever try to call for help?
No, I did not.
Why not?
I just didn't want to make him even more mad and angry with me. I didn't want him to hit me again.
Did you ever try to get out of the car?
I tried to get it, not to run away, but just to, I believe it was to get something from the back. I tried to get out of the truck, but I couldn't stand up on my legs.
Why couldn't you stand up on your legs?
Because I was shot in my legs.
She said Radu handcuffed her to the seatbelt. She was afraid he was going to shoot her and that she wouldn't see her daughter again. She said she thought the drugs he had taken were now really starting to affect him. As he was outside the truck, she saw him stumble and lose his balance. She said she was then scared that he was going to pass out or die and that she would be handcuffed inside the truck, unable to do anything. She said he told her, "Don't worry, you're not going to go before me."
And at that point, I was just thinking everything in my head, like, what does that mean? I thought he was going to have to shoot me because there was no other way. He was going to kill me, no other weapons, I guess. And I was just thinking, is he going to shoot me in my chest? Is he going to shoot me in my head? How is that going to feel? How is it, how much pain it's going to be?
She said she took the pills he had given her earlier. She wanted to ease her pain. When asked if she knew what the pills were, she said Radu had told her they were Vicodin. At one point, someone approached them, and she believes that it was his friend Alex, but she didn't stay long. Sometime after that, they both were in the truck, and she said things were calm. He even came over to her side with a knife and sliced her pants open so he could see her wounds. There was antiseptic spray in the car, and so she began spraying her legs with it. She said there was a moment where she remembered having the knife on her lap.
I remember having the knife with me for a little bit, like in my lap.
You had the knife for a little bit?
Yes.
Okay. Did you do anything with the knife?
No, I didn't.
Sometime after that, she said they started arguing again, and then he charged at her with the knife, and she slid back. The door was open, and so she fell out of the car and cut herself on the frame of the door. He then came charging at her again.
When I fell out of the car and I was on my back, I was trying to move away from the truck, trying to get up and maybe get back in. And he came over to my side and started stabbing me. And I remember
stabbing me.
I believe the first stab was in my hand because I instinctively pulled it out to stop the blow. And then the other stab wounds were in my legs, around the gunshot wound, and one was higher up above my knee.
She said she was lying on the ground, reeling from the stabbings, and he started beating her over the head with his gun. Then the next thing she remembers is him sitting on her chest with his knees pinning her shoulders. He then choked her with his hands around her neck. He kept yelling at her, accusing her of cheating on him while they were married. He kept saying he didn't believe her, and so she said she finally just made up that she had slept with two men, just to make him happy, to make him hear what he wanted to hear, she said. But that made him angrier, and so he choked her even harder. When asked if she voluntarily took off any of her clothes that night, she said the only thing she voluntarily took off was her jacket. At some point, she said she passed out. She remembers waking up the next day when it was light outside. She was still in the car, and she saw commotion up in front of the truck and saw Radu sitting on the curb with his hands handcuffed behind his back. She then blacked out again. When she came to, she woke up in the hospital. There was a detective seated next to her, and he started asking her questions about what had happened. She was asked what she said to police and if she ever said that it was a suicide pact.
We were arguing. I remember telling them what we were arguing about. I remember saying that, talking about the gun. I remember saying that I did not hear him say he's going to kill me exactly in those words. And I remember saying I didn't want to press charges.
She also remembers telling them that it was all a misunderstanding. She was asked why she told them that it was a misunderstanding.
I was trying to protect him. I was blaming myself. I thought a lot of it was my fault, and I didn't want to make him even more angry at me. I just wanted to show him that I was willing to work on our marriage and get back together, I guess, still at that point.
She was asked if she remembers telling the doctors that it was a suicide pact.
Not exactly. I remember talking about what happened in the field.
She said if she did say that, it was because she was trying to protect him and she was still blaming herself. After the incident, she saw a few counselors to help her process what had happened. She said she realized that Radu had no right to do what he did and that it wasn't her fault.
I don't ever want my daughter to think that it's okay for something like this to happen to her, that it's not acceptable.
When asked if she had thought that he was going to kill her, she said at one point, yes, She said she thought she was going to die in that field. On cross-examination, Radu's attorney pressed her on whether they had a suicide pact.
So if I asked you that question, was there an understanding between you and Mr. Montini that you were going to commit suicide, what would your answer be?
That's what he was pushing for, yes.
That's not the question I'm asking. Was there an understanding between you and this gentleman that you were going to commit suicide?
I guess so. He thought I was going to, yes.
Ma'am, it's just a yes or no question. Was there an understanding between my client and yourself, your husband, that you're going to commit suicide?
Yes.
We'll get into more of the prosecution's case, along with Radu's testimony, right after this quick break from today's sponsors. The prosecution called a series of evidence technicians and forensic specialists to the stand, who testified about DNA on various items, matching that of Natalia and Radu. And afterwards, prosecutors focused their attention on Radu himself, who, instead of sitting at the defense table where we normally see the defendant sit, Radu was seated every day out in the open in front of the jury. And while he was sitting there, he held a photo of himself and Natalia in his hands. And from time to time, he would toy with a small doll-shaped pin that was on his jacket. He keeps playing with that in front of the jury, the prosecutor told the judge, saying that he was trying to influence them. Maybe it's a good luck charm, the judge replied, adding that he didn't quite know what to say about that. The prosecutor asked him to do something about it, but the judge declined. And so the prosecution rested, and the defense began their case. The defense's first witness was Radu's friend Alex, whom Natalia had testified about on the stand. Alex told the jury that she was friends with both the Montines and that she had met them the previous year. When asked to describe her living situation, she said she lived with them for a time, that she was like a roommate who did a bunch of dishes. She described what she thought about Radu and Natalia's relationship.
They were struggling to try to make things work. But everything kind of just fell apart. There was a lot of dishonesty on Natalia's behalf and a lot of frustration on Radu's. And I think everything became so overwhelming and it just kind of spiraled.
She was asked if she ever witnessed any domestic violence between the two.
There was a lot of arguing. On one occasion, Radu was trying to sleep, and Natalia kept banging on his door, and he shoved her out of the doorway and slammed the door shut.
At about 8 p.m. on March 22nd, 2016, she said she received a call from Natalia.
The nature of the phone call was to give me directions to Detroit, the field of which they were found, and to give me directions to where her jewelry was placed. She told me that she wanted Nadia to have their wedding rings.
She said Natalia text messaged her too, the crossroads and a Google map of the exact location.
Did Natalia ever express to you her desire to kill herself?
She mentioned multiple times about suffering with depression and suicidal thoughts just through personal conversation. Days before the actual incident, she mentioned how she was giving up, how she couldn't do it anymore. And she was afraid that she was having suicidal thoughts.
Alex said she went to the location that Natalia had sent over. Radu was outside of the truck when she pulled up. He looked really tired, not like himself, which was something she said she had noticed about him from the last few days. Natalia was sitting inside the truck. She said she asked Radu what was going on, and he told her that he just couldn't do this anymore. She said she started walking over to the truck to go see Natalia, but Radu stopped her and told her not to. She saw Natalia reach into the back seat and retrieve something. She noted that she looked tired, but that she was moving fine. She thought it was another, quote, cry wolf moment.
I spent probably 3 weeks listening to them argue and just consistently say that they're giving up, but then the next day they wanted to try again and how one can do better. And it was just an emotional roller coaster consistently that I thought this incident was just another cry wolf of attention.
She was asked more about Radu's demeanor that night.
He didn't sleep for about 4 days. He was just, he kind of started talking to himself, trying to piece together their relationship. And that was about it.
She said he appeared to be under the influence of drugs and alcohol that night, cocaine and Molly specifically. On cross-examination, Alex admitted that this was the first time she had told police or prosecutors what she saw that day. She also admitted that although she had said on direct that she lived with both Radu and Natalia for a time, she had really only lived with Radu, since Natalia and Radu had been living in separate houses. The prosecutor then asked her about the phone call she received from both Natalia and Radu on the night of March 22nd. She said the nature of Radu's call was to pick up money and then disperse it between their daughter's babysitter and herself. She said Radu said he wanted their daughter to be taken care of with the money. He then handed the phone over to Natalia, who then gave her directions. She said Radu gave her $2,000 in cash. She was asked if she ever thought about calling the police.
When you got out to this field, when it was dark outside, in the middle of Detroit, did you know where you were going? Like, had you been to this area before?
I have not.
Did you think that this was odd?
It was definitely out of character.
Did you, at that point in time, think, you know, this is strange, I should probably maybe call the police or call someone for help?
It crossed my mind.
But you didn't?
I did not.
Okay. And again, you didn't call the police then, and you didn't tell anybody?
They didn't
this.
Sound as if they were in danger. They sounded sad.
Well, when you said they, you really only spoke to, in person, the defendant at the field. That's true, correct?
In person, yes.
Yeah. And when you were talking to Natalia, she was just telling you how to get there, and then you mentioned something about the jewelry. Is that true?
Yes.
And when Natalia was talking, you said that you could still hear the defendant in the background of that conversation. Is that true?
Yes.
Alex was also asked about how she accompanied Radu to pick up Natalia from the police station the day before.
You would agree that he was very upset at having to do that. Is that true?
He was.
And he was upset with Natalia, is that true?
He was disappointed.
He was angry with her that she had put him in this situation, you would agree, right?
Disappointed.
Okay.
Alex told the court that she's a makeup artist, and she admitted that she had covered up a bruise on Natalia before.
And is it true that at one point in time, Natalia asked you to cover something up, like a bruise or something, on her body?
I've done makeup on Natalia multiple times for photo shoots. There was an event where she asked me how to cover up a bruise.
Was that before or after you saw the defendant shove her at some point in their house?
I do not recall.
After Alex's testimony, Radu was then called to the stand. The audio from his testimony is extremely difficult to understand. So for the most part, I'm just going to tell you what he testified to. He told the court that he and Natalia first started having problems in 2008. They were having problems having children, which put a strain on their marriage. When asked to describe March 22nd, 2016, he said, quote, "It was a culmination of 3 months of rapid downfall of our relationship and our happiness." He said they were preparing to go to Chicago to see a behavioral therapist who would help them with their relationship. He told the jury that the main problem in their marriage was that he could not trust Natalia. He said in the last couple months, she had told him that she hadn't been in love with him since the month they got married, which shocked him. On March 22nd, he said he picked her up so she could see their daughter before she went to bed. It was then that he learned that she had lied about meeting with a coworker earlier in the day. He said it had nothing to do with cheating, but the fact that she always lied to him about minute things. When asked about his mental state at that point, he said he was extremely sleep deprived, that earlier in February, Natalia had disclosed to him, quote, a bunch of events which was very irresponsible with my daughter. He said they both agreed that she needed psychiatric help, and so he would get physical custody. She signed a document stating that, and then they had it notarized. He admitted to taking some Vicodin pills while in the car with her that night, and he also admitted to telling her that he couldn't handle this anymore. He told her that he's done, that he just can't do this. Initially, she was going to get out of the car, but he said he asked her to stay, and so she did. She then told him that she wanted some pills too, and so he gave her some. They continued driving, and he said his plan was to commit suicide. At some point, he pulled out his gun and pointed it at his head. She yelled and pulled the gun away, and as she did that, the gun went off and shot her in the legs. He said after the gunshots rang out, they were both confused as to what had just happened. He panicked and eventually pulled into a private lot. He realized that she had been shot, so he used a knife to cut open her pant legs. He said there was blood, but that the wounds weren't really bleeding. He used some antiseptic spray he had in his car and sprayed that on her. Sometime in the evening, did you lose your temper and strike your wife with your fist? His attorney asked. Yes, Radu replied. Sometime in the evening, did you lose your temper and strike your wife on the head with a gun? He asked. No, Radu replied. Are you sure? Absolutely, he said. He admitted to handcuffing her, but said that the way she had grabbed the gun was so unpredictable, and so he felt that he had to. He said he was still suicidal at that point. He couldn't see a good way out where he could still provide for his family. His wife is injured with a firearm, and he's drugged up. When his friend Alex showed up, he was asked if Natalia tried escaping or if she screamed out to her, and he said no. He said Natalia actually asked him to pull up closer so she could hand her some signed checks. He said they both wanted Alex to act as an agent in basically distributing their possessions and taking care of their daughter. At some point, he passed out in his car, and when he woke up, the gas tank was empty. When the police officer, Officer Kolar, pulled up, he was going to give him cash so he could get some gas for him. On cross-examination, Radu admitted to hitting Natalia while he was driving, and that when Natalia grabbed the gun from him, when it went off, his finger was likely on the trigger. He was asked why he didn't drive to the hospital after he saw that she had been shot, and he said his plan was to commit suicide and that she wanted to do it too. He said when he took the Vicodin pills, she told him that she wanted to take them too, which he said meant she wanted to kill herself alongside him. After he passed out in the truck, he woke up with a clearer head, and he said he realized that committing suicide was a stupid thing to do. By that time, their cell phones had died, and so he couldn't call anyone. When Officer Kolar arrived, he denied telling him that he was a police officer. In total, he estimated that he and Natalia were in that empty lot for about 12 hours. In her closing arguments, the prosecutor pointed out that Radu was essentially blaming the entire situation on Natalia, saying that she had all these problems, that he couldn't trust her, that she hurt him. She said Radu's intent was for Natalia to not leave that field alive. And she said Radu's testimony was not credible, that it didn't make any sense. He didn't account for the stab wounds that Natalia suffered, she said, or for the blood trail. He didn't explain her testimony that at some point he was sitting on her chest, beating her over the head with that gun and strangling her. She ended her closing arguments by saying, quote, if this is a suicide pact, Why is Natalia the only one beaten, shot, stabbed, and strangled? In their closing arguments, Radu's attorney told the judge that they are in no way saying that Natalia is to blame, but he pointed out that there were inconsistencies in her testimony. He said Radu's gun was never tested for fingerprints, and that when he asked Natalia if it had been tested, would her fingerprints be on it, she said, "I don't know. I don't believe so." He said that, in fact, he couldn't even keep track of all the times Natalia said, "I don't know," or "I don't recall." He said that if Radu's intent was to do what was alleged by the government, to kill Natalia, he certainly had ample opportunity to do that if he wanted. The jury deliberated and ultimately decided that at least some of Radu's testimony was credible. They found him not guilty of assault with intent to murder and assault with a dangerous weapon, but they did convict him on the other charges. He was found guilty of assault with intent to do great bodily harm, unlawful imprisonment, torture, and domestic violence. They essentially said they didn't believe that he meant to kill her, but that he did torture and beat her. And as a result of their decision, Radu would no longer be facing life in prison. At his sentencing, Radu stood up and apologized to Natalia. He also begged the court for leniency, saying that his daughter is a victim if she has to go a long time without her father. Judge Craig Strong told him that that was Radu's fault and then said, quote, "What you did is one of the most mean and evil and bizarre things I have ever seen a human being do to another human being. You are evil. You are an evil, evil person. I can't even imagine doing this to anyone. Torturing her all that time. Evil in nature." He then sentenced Radu to serve at least 25 years in prison, meaning he will likely be about 59 years old when he's released. And that's all for today's episode. I'd love to know what you think about this case. Do you believe Radu, that he and Natalia had a suicide pact? Or do you believe the prosecution, that he meant to kill her that night? And did you think that there was enough evidence to convict him of attempted murder? Let me know by emailing me at podcast@courtjunkie.com, by tweeting me at courtjunkiepod, or by joining the conversation on Instagram at courtjunkie. And lastly, I recently changed the tiers on Patreon. So now, for as little as $3 a month, you can get access to these episodes ad-free. For $6 a month, you get these episodes ad-free plus monthly bonus episodes. And for $10 a month, you get all of that plus Court Junkie stickers, a Court Junkie button, and additional content, which includes full interviews with sources and various case documents. To check all that out and to sign up, just go to courtjunkie.com/support. Thanks again for listening. Until next time.